SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back, hour three at the races. Sunny and hot day right now, and they're breezing over at Timonium. I'm going to breeze my way over there myself after the show today and take in the day one of the 3 days under tack show. The Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic two-year-old training sale, and we'll see. That is a sale that's produced recent names, Army Mule, for instance. And we'll talk to Todd Pletcher in a little bit about Army Mule, see if he's on track for the Metropolitan Handicap for the Met Mile. Jeremy Plonk joining us, though, and today the first day of ExpressBet Preakness Wagering Guide updates. And updates are going to be important, Jeremy, because there's been some movement when it came to the field and some rumored involvement and then some departures, Boldoro, namely. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, you know, there hasn't been a ton of news in the 2 weeks, you know, since the Derby, other than the health, of course, of justifying the Derby winner, and all looks clear on that front now. So it's kind of one of those waiting games. Let's see what happens with the draw and kind of play it from there, and how you strategize and try to build your wagers for this Preakness will be, you know, important, because I don't think the opinions are going to vary greatly amongst people. I mean, I think people are going to be pretty firm in their opinions. How they try to manage and weight those opinions will be what separates, you know, various levels of horse players and who's successful and who's not. So a real good exercise in wagering strategy in play here for the Middle Jewel.
And we talked yesterday with Johnny, for instance, and we tried to flesh out, you know, the rifle versus shotgun approaches versus Derby and Preakness, Jeremy, and, you know, with a more modest sized field and with a overwhelming favorite, with a very clear second choice, you know, and then everybody else in double digits, it's a question of leveraging bankroll and heavying up, and that opens a different, I would say, question for people that can be shy about $10 tri wheels or, you know, $20 straight whatever bets. If you're not used to betting those increments, it could be hard to pull the trigger.
It can be. And, you know, we're going to be teaching in the infield this year, the Wagering 101 at Infield Fest. It'll be our eighth appearance out there, the 10th year of the Infield Fest at Pimlico. And one of the main things we try to tell people, whether they're newcomers and even veterans of horseplay, really sometimes don't see the forest through the trees. But one of the great things about betting on horse racing is you can control the return variable, whether you're going for a big return or a small return, by betting the same amount. It's not, you know, if you want to bet on a football game and make 500, you got to bet 500 to make 500. But in horse racing, it's not that way. And so if you are willing to assume risk in your return, not in your investment, in your return, you can bet the same thing in horse racing. That being, look, I think Justify is going to win the Preakness. If I want to make $500 off of this horse winning the Preakness, I can't do it betting him to win, obviously. I can't do it in exactas. I can't do it in trifectas, even for a small increment. But if you're looking at a pick four, a pick five, and you can single to him, you may spend the same amount of money, assume a lot more risk, but give yourself a chance at that big return. So to me, that's the way you have to look at it. Look, if you want to spend $10 and I want to spend $10, there's a way to get 11 back, and there's a way to get 1,000 back. And we both invested $10. And that's the creativity of a horse player that I think, even in this big news yesterday, of course, with the sports betting, and I'm following Dennis Drazen on your show for folks who have been listening throughout, then, you know, that's one of the main differences between betting on sports and betting on horse racing. You know, you'd have to do a 10-team parlay in pro sports to do just what you can do in a pick four, pick five in horse racing in terms of the return. So those are the kind of things that we need to look at for this particular card, if you have an opinion that Justify and Good Magic are clearly the two best horses in the Preakness, it's hard to argue largely against that. Maybe you try to get somebody else in the second slot. You know, I think you could get creative with Bravazo or Lone Sailor, I think, as your place horses to try to get a price in their stack. Those are the ones that, you know, I'll be considering a little bit more than others. But then, you know, then you look at the Will Pays and see what your potential exactas are and such. You know, the exact of the Derby was an awfully good bet. $67, $69 mm-hmm. back on those two runners, the champion two-year-old and the 5-2 heavy favorite. I mean, when there was no clear second choice, that 5-2 favoritism was really strong on what we saw on Justify. So, you know, it's bet a little to make a lot. That's what Paul Matisse, your buddy, always says. And, you know, that's one of his strong suits. And you still can do that. Even with Justify as a $3 proposition, a $2.80 proposition in this race, there's still a bet a little to get a lot approach. It just might take you four races or five races before the Preakness to get to that, you know, and that's what we have to do as horse players. I can't wait to see the draw on Wednesday, honestly, because that's going to tell me everything. I mean, do I love a horse in the Dixie? Do I like somebody in the Jimmy Murphy or the Pimlico, you know, the Maryland Sprint? You know, these are the kinds of races that are going to kind of make or break the day. If they're loaded with 3-5 shots and 4-5 shots, I might be looking at a situation where I say, look, a pick four is going to pay $80. You know, I've got to play, like you said, that $25 pull the trigger. But you know what, folks? What is the difference? I see people nickel dime 50-cent dollar combinations for $20, $30, $40, $50 a race all the time. And out of those combinations, they may have 100 combos at 50 cents each, and 99 of the 100 combinations are guaranteed to lose before they ever leave the starting gate because only one of the 100 can come in. So there are people who are willing to spend $20, $30, $40 on a race and spread it a mile thin. What is the difference between just playing a cold cock, Dick Girardi-style $30 straight exacta, one punch, as he likes to call it, you know? I think that's probably your best approach in a Preakness like this, and you have to get to the multi-race wagers. I think they're going to be key to your day.
The other issue that we're going to obviously, it looks like, have to deal with is the, you know, the weather. And there is one thing that people brought up, and regarding the turf, there's no reason to, you know, quote unquote, preserve the turf. The turf stakes are most certainly staying on the grass. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those that say, oh, well, it is it dangerous if the turf is soft? The danger of turf that is taking water is not the day that the turf is soft. The danger comes afterward. The reason races get taken off the turf is so that deep indentations that then dry hard and then become places where horses can step in holes and break their legs and ankles. That's why races get taken off the turf, not because it's dangerous the day that the turf is soft. Horses will get over soft turf. Some love it. That is not related to why races get taken off the turf. So the expectation is that we'll be on the turf throughout the weekend. Maybe not those allowance races. Maybe some of those might come off on Friday, but there's no racing to worry about next week.
And if you are one of those, you know, handicap ahead types, and why wouldn't you be? When the streets are drawn Sunday for Friday, right? I mean, I've already looked at the Friday card completely all the way through. The one thing, like you had mentioned, you know, like those allowance-type races, turf sprints would be more likely to be taken off the turf than a route race. That's another thing to consider because, remember, on the backstretch of a turf sprint, they're using 10 paths, right? I mean, you know, you got 10, 12 horses in the starting gate, and turf sprints really tear up a turf course. And so if they were going to try to do any kind of protectionistic approach to preserving the course for the major stakes races, those 5-furlong turf sprints that aren't in the stakes ranks on Friday, those are the ones I think you would look at and say, okay, there's some jeopardy here, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, kind of handicap that if you're looking ahead to try to make a decision. It is tough with the weather because, look, I'll give you a great example. I love three horses on Derby Day. American Gal in the Humanity Distaff, I just thought she couldn't lose. I thought Whitmore coming off his race in the Churchill Downs Handicap, coming off his race at Oaklawn, I really liked him a ton. And I like the Cassie horse in the finale coming off the race at Keeneland in the 14th, if you had patience enough or bet ahead like I did on him so that you still had some bankroll left. But once the races ran a bit and the wet track and the conditions got the way they were, I had to come back on my bet on Whitmore and remove some of it. You know, just the style of the track and the race and the way it was playing, he just wasn't a five-star. You know, if you're a $100 better, you know, he wasn't a $100 bet at that point anymore with the way the track was playing. He was a $20 bet. And so you got to do things appropriately and come back and peel. So, you know, we do a lot of work in advance. People are going to get cranking on this stuff Wednesday, late afternoon, early evening, probably Thursday during the day, Friday handicapping for Saturday. But remember, when you get to Sunday, you know, or when you get to race day on Saturday, you do have to look at the conditions. And look, you know, my multi-race wagers were all bet through Deauville in the stakes race on the turf, you know, the former Woodford Reserve at Churchill. So when he came out, my pick fours, pick fives were like, wow, geez, I don't know. Now, do you just single Beach Patrol? I like Beach Patrol, but I don't love him. You know, I really like the other horse. So it will change things up, even if they do stay on the turf, because there could be a horse you like in the Dixie whose trainer says, you know what, in these conditions, even though they are running and it isn't off the turf, I'm going to wait for another day. And you as a horse player just have to be cognizant of that and realize, ah, yeah, I know it's Derby Day. Yeah, I know it's Preakness Day. But just don't stick somebody else in that place and refire, you know. If you built your whole ticket around Deauville and all of a sudden he's out of there, just don't bet the same ticket back with Beach Patrol, you know. I mean, it didn't turn out that way anyway because Yoshida ended up winning the race. But, you know, if your single comes out, it's very difficult to justify in your mind that you're replacing them with another single, you know. Is the next horse in the race that much of a standout that you're willing to bank your entire ticket on? So those are the kind of decisions you have to do as a horse player, you know, and in strategizing and figuring out how you're going to build your day. And I think the multi-race wagers absolutely are going to be the key to wagering on Preakness Day. Again, unless you have an opinion that justifies going to get beaten, I don't. You know, if you have an opinion he's going to win the race, the multis have to be the way that you're going to make your day. And if you're building them around a turf race where the conditions could be off a little bit, you know, be flexible. Have a plan A, a plan B. You know, hey, I love this horse in the Dixie, but if he comes out, this is now a three deep race. And if it's a three deep race, do I spend three times as much on my ticket, or do I have other horses I feel like I can trim somewhere else? It's real life decisions. These are the things you have to make. And we only have to look back to Derby Day to say it's not that far back in history where we had to make these kind of decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jeremy, give everybody the details. You know, you mentioned the infield project, which has been so well received and has helped so many players take an interest and cultivate their development as a player.
Yeah, we'll be out in the infield. As you come out of the tunnel, we'll be to the left of the tunnel this year instead of to the right. If you've seen any pictures or diagrams of the new infield, they've moved the stage for where the main concerts were. And had we stayed in our old spot, the stage would basically be right in front of us, and nobody would hear a single thing we were saying. A lot of the activity in the Preakness infield now is going to be moved to the left as you look at the racetrack, so towards the far turn. There's going to be a lot more activity over in that direction in terms of people milling around and the food and the tents and the projects and the promotional stuff like we are with the Wagering 101. The Stronach Group has us up at a new tent. We've got some slick new digs that's going to look fancier than ever, and it's going to be a comfortable place to be for a lot of fans. I mean, this big top over the years, 400 or 500 people can kind of be piled in this thing all at the same time. And throughout the day, we'll talk to literally thousands and thousands and thousands of horse fans. We see some same groups every year come back to it, which is really fun. Some of the wagering cards we've handed out over the years, you know, wallet-sized fold-ups. People were pulling back out of their wallet because they kept them in there from the previous years. We usually get a nice group of cadets down from West Point that come in early and come in and get some one-on-one and some small group instruction. And it's really a fun time to meet and talk to the fans. We see a lot of night schoolers out there. People make their way out there, have been in the night school program over the years and want to come introduce themselves. That's always rewarding. And, you know, this year there's going to be a strong presence from ExpressVet in the tent and new account signups for them, and hopefully we can get some people into the world of ADW wagering as well. We're going to be testing a new app out there as well and doing some fan interaction and see what they think of some new products and things along those lines in the technology sector. So a lot's going to be going on out there. Brian Spencer, Brian Natto, my cohorts from Horse Player Now, will be joining me as well as Some others, Catherine Wheeler will be with us back. She's, I think, on her third or fourth Preakness Force. Spencer was the original tent force in 2010. It literally was a tent back then. It was almost like a campground with an 8-foot table, and now it's, you know, several hundred square feet and large. But Brian was there in the very first one in the infield, and he'll be back. We're happy to have him on our team joining us full-time here in the past year. So he'll be able to make his return to the Preakness. I'm looking forward to having him with us. It's a lot of fun. And the one thing I say to people, because they think, you know, they still see the running of the urinals and that's what the infield is to some people. That is like so 1990s. I mean, it really is in 2000. It's not the way that it is out there. You can come out there. We get a lot of, you know, 40-year-old people, 50-year-old people, couples that bring their lawn chairs and come out, see the races out there. Sure, there's a lot of revelry and fun going on and a lot of kids who have a little too much to drink and that sort of thing and have a good time. But there's more than one group that's in that infield out there, and we see a lot of them. And I will say this, even the kids who come and want to make a bet, they're not $2 bettors. The number of $20, $50, $100 tickets that I see during the course of the day would blow your mind. You know, one of the first questions we ask people is like, well, how much money do you want to spend today on your betting? And you might think you hear $30, $40 as your most common answer, and it's not. You know, it's $100. It's $200. You know, I'd spend $250. You got a group of people saying, yeah, we're each going to chip $200 in, so we've got like $1,000 between the five of us to play for the day. You know, I mean, people like to gamble, and as the excitement of yesterday's announcement that you'll be able to bet on football and baseball and basketball and everything else lets you know from a nation, is we have a nation of people who like to gamble, and young people like to gamble too, and it's not all nickels and dimers out there. So they're going to put some money through the windows for sure. There's going to be a strong presence out there to teach them the right way. You know, it's about selling programs in the tent and getting people to read past performances, and we work with them. You know, We've had all kinds there. You know, I mean, we've had some people who have been like engineering students. I had a guy making his own speed figures by the fourth race one year. And he came up to me and he said, well, how would you factor weight into your XYZ quotient? I'm like, dude, you are already over my mathematical head. You know, it was interesting. But, you know, like I'm saying, it is all types. But one of the great things about dealing with people who are fairly new to the game or only come once a year is you can usually tell, Steve, within the first 90 seconds to 2 minutes, whether you got a potential better or not. You know, I mean, just the way they look at you, the first question out of their mouth, the excitement they have when you tell them, well, you know what, you know, the average exacta pays about $30 for a $2 bet. You know, that's like 15-1 on your money. If you get a twinkle in their eye when they understand that 15-1 is pretty good in the gambling world, you know, you got somebody who's interested right away. So there's a couple little tells, if you will, in the poker parlance. That will tell you right away whether you've got somebody who could be a potential fan, and it's a lot of fun. I can't even estimate how many thousands of people we've talked to over the 8 years.
Well, we look forward to seeing you here this weekend and the team that will help cultivate neophytes into accomplished bettors, and I can attest as somebody who spent many years in the infield as a fan player and then with the barbecue, all the years we did it here, I saw all the college kids and, you know, the freshmen from all the schools. They're having fun, and then slowly you start to see the sophomores and juniors, and they're there in the morning and they're sitting in the lawn chairs and they're handicapping. So they morph into players, and there's no question about it. And I was a creature of the infield myself, so I believe it's. It may be the primordial ooze, but horse players come crawling out on 2 feet onto the shore like catfish.
the dress of attire out there in the infield a lot of years is NBA basketball jerseys. You know, you see so many of the young kids wearing those jerseys, and we as you know, as the people who are in the tent every year, is like we look around to see, like, you know, it's almost like going down the highway and trying to pick out license plates when you were a kid on a vacation or something. We're all trying to find like the most bizarre jersey you've seen today, and the Memphis Grizzlies Brian Big Country Reeves jersey we saw a couple of years ago still holds the cake. We haven't seen anybody out through the Big Country Reeves jersey yet, so I'm looking forward to that. We've seen some Artis Gilmore, some of the classic like ABA type jerseys and stuff, but looking forward to seeing what the kids have to offer in their jersey game this year too. That's always a lot of fun.
Jeremy Plonk, everybody. Jeremy, I will see you this weekend, and I appreciate it. HorsePlayerNow.com for the Buzz Report, and for those of you that have friends or anybody, or maybe
kids, nephews, nieces, grandchildren that are going to be in the infield, have them come say hello to Jeremy and Brian and the team. We'll stay right here. Don't have enough time to take breaks between now and noon when we'll head over to Timonium. But John Parada standing by, and John getting ready to head to Ireland. And going back to last week, one of the Dublin Racing Club fillies and part of a big bulky field at the Curra. And John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Heading over to Timonium. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. I've only bought one out of Timonium sale ever, but it's a nice sale. Some good horses have come out of there.
It's become a, you know, it's funny. Years ago, I remember Trombetta saying, you know, this is a great place and a good opportunity for two-year-olds, and then it got fashionable. And it doesn't feel like you can sneak in and sneak away with a bargain so easily as they did at one time. But I'll tell you, speaking of bargains, John, we've got a few dozen people now that have already signed up for the Racing Club, the Dublin Racing Club, and you're headed back over. When you leave?
I'm leaving. I'll be there on Monday.
Nice.
Monday coming, and the 1,000 guineas is a week from Saturday, and the 2,000 guineas, excuse me, and then the 1,000 guineas is the following day, on Sunday, both at the Curra, which I'm very excited to see the progress there. It looks like it's coming along. I've seen some photos of the structure that they're putting up. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful race. It was always a beautiful race course, but the stands were so dated and antiquated. It really was something they needed to do, and good for them. They went ahead and took care of it. So, but it's it should be a good week's racing. The spring has finally come. It was a rough winter in Ireland this year. Probably that what they say is the least 30 years since they've seen a winter like that with snow. You rarely see any snow there. I spent January and February there last year, and I never saw a flake of snow. I had a couple of cold days. And so the spring has sprung, and the mares are starting to get in foal. They were having trouble getting a lot of them in foal because they weren't cycling properly.
Hmm.
You know, they weren't used to that type of weather.
Interesting.
But the grass has greened up, and, you know, as if you watch the TVG carries the morning races, early morning they carry the Irish and English races, and you can see the shadows on the ground when the horses are running, and you can see how bright and sunny it's been. Of course, it rains all the time over there. It couldn't be sunny one day and rain the next. It keeps the turf courses soft and softer than we're used to. The horses over there never, ever see a turf course like we have here. Most of the time, if you have a trainer over there, he'll be scratching if the turf course gets hard. Kind of the opposite of what we do here, where, you know, if it rains, then it gets soft, people scratch. So, or they take it off the turf because they don't want it to get torn up. But most of the tracks, and there's 26 of them in Ireland, if you include Laytown, which is run on the beach.
The beach.
But you'd have to include Laytown because it's an official track, but they only run one day a year. So they got the Churchill Downs concept down perfect. You know, they run when they want, just one day a year. They're all different. They're only a couple of them that are actual ovals. Most of them run horseshoe shaped courses or almost rectangular shapes to them, or odd. You know, they're configured to the ground, the way the ground lays. For instance, Punchestown, where they run the best hurdle races there. They had the big Punchestown Festival in April, which concludes the jump season, and that is it's a major racetrack, and if you look at old drawings or lithographs from the 1800s, it's exactly the same when you look at it. And if you're looking out from the stands, it's exactly the same as it was 100 years ago. One of my favorite tracks there. But the only one I will make on this trip that's going to coincide will probably be the Curragh on the weekend. I've got to go look at, we have a lot of horses in training over there. We have one that's in training for the Dublin Racing Club, which has one of those unpronounceable names, Estamajam, by Raven's Pass out of a Darshan mare. She's a three-year-old filly with Michael O'Callaghan getting ready for her maiden start shortly, her first start, and training well. I'm going to look forward to seeing her train. And we also have, I have an interest in a bunch of horses, small interest with horses with Eddie Lynham and Michael O'Callaghan and Ken Condon, who are all fine trainers. There's a lot of good horse trainers in Ireland, and obviously a lot of them have come to America and made their names.
Absolutely.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we want people to visit the website, DublinRacingClub.com, and the opportunity to sign on for next to nothing and be a part of this. We've already got members that have planned their first trip over.
There are a couple of them over there right now. And it's amazing what's amazing to me is I think this is the reach that Sirius Satellite has. I mean, we have members from Florida, Ohio, New York, Alberta, Canada, New Mexico, Louisiana, Montana, Missouri, California. I'm just reading with them. Massachusetts, Connecticut, and California. It's really amazing. Nice. They have one thing in common, though. There's not a lot of vowels on the end of their names. it should be fun. I mean, I've had interaction with everyone back and forth, the emails, and helped some people get passes already because part of our program is that you get passed to the track. And it's a little different over there. It's $20 or $25 a person to get into the track. And because they don't fund the tracks the way we do, they're all subsidized by the state, but they don't take any money out of the betting, the opposite of what we do. We live off the betting handle. And Irish racing, the bookmakers take, I don't know what percent, maybe 90% of the betting goes through the bookmakers, and they pay a fee, but they don't pay a percentage. So, you know, the tracks have to make their living by admissions and tickets and festivals and, and of course, like I said, there's 26 of them in Ireland, but I don't think any of them run for more than a total of 3 weeks in a year. You know, they run two days here, 2 days there, 2 days here. And but it's a great place to go if you're going touring there to make a trip. I did a trip last summer where we did 6 race tracks in 12 days, which sounds like a hit, but got to remember the country's about 110 miles by 300. So it's, you know, no place is really too far. You can make it from one track to another in a day easily, but you want to stop and take in all the sights. It's just such a lovely country to visit anyway. But we will be lining up. We've got farm tours of the stud farms, as well as we're going to line up some tours with the distilleries for people who like a little Irish whiskey once in a while. As myself, and looking forward to doing that.
Well, I wanted to catch up before you went and want people to visit the website, DublinRacingClub.com, and the rest of May, too. $95 if you're an individual, which is a ridiculous offer. And if you have a family of four, if you want to join as a family, just $195 for the four of you. And you get the writing of John on the blog section. John and Bill Barish are writing entries, and that's worth the price alone, even ahead of the horses. So,
for fans of Bill Barish, Laughing in the Hills and Fine Place to Daydream and all of his wonderful, wonderful writing. Bill and I got to be good friends through the writing on the Luck show for HBO, and Bill lives in Dublin. So if I'm not there, and you know someone's going over, hopefully Bill will be able to hook up with them at the races and, you know, have a pint because he's not averse to having a pint. And it's good fun. It's good fun. So
well, if you're
and
going
I hope
over,
to get you and Tina over pretty soon.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever we got the window, without
because you'd just be another dressed up guy over there. Everybody dresses for the races. actually, the grooms are dressed better than most people. They wear three piece suits and ties sometimes. It's funny.
Well, John, I appreciate it, and it's funny you talk about being dressed up at the races because Todd Pletcher is joining us, and when I saw Todd on Derby Day, he was kind of sneaking through the tunnel in like a windbreaker, and he had a hat pulled down, and looked under the brim of the hat to confirm it was Todd, and it was. He was on his way later on to take the honors in the American Turf with Maraud and plenty of other successes over the past week, including High Happy's win, the very impressive Argentinian that seems to be getting better with every North American start. Todd Pletcher joins us. Todd, congratulations.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
You probably recognized the voice of John Parada just before, and you know, you go back with John a long way.
Definitely, yep. I did. I caught the tail end of that.
We've started John put together this Irish-based racing club concept, and so we're bringing people over to Ireland, and they can take in the races, they can take in some golf, some links courses, they can go to the pubs, all kinds of fun. Kind of that
sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be we're just getting started, but it's already got a good roll. You're on a nice roll right now, and let's just start with the most recent, and High Happy, who feels like he's going to be a major player in the division going forward.
Yeah, we've been delighted with his progress since we got him in. He's just he's a real cool horse to be around, a real professional to train, and was really pleased with his first race for us because I thought it was a bit too short for him, but he closed really well in the Gulfstream Park Turf Handicap, and then you know, got to stretch him out in the Pan American, and you know, he delivered a big performance and came back and got that first U.S. Grade 1 win in the Man of War. So just we couldn't really ask for him to be doing any better or progressing any better than he has for us. He's been a great addition to the stable,
and he seems versatile too, distance wise, which is a nice tool to have with the various opportunities throughout the year leading up to Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he's probably at his best at a mile and a quarter plus, and he seems to handle, you know, mile and 3/8, mile and a half, no problem. So it puts us in a position to have a lot of options, and you know, we'll consider the Manhattan back on Belmont Day at a mile and a quarter if we felt like we needed a little more time. Then like 3 weeks later is the United Nations at Monmouth. And, you know, the race we'd really like to have them set up for is the Sword Dancer at Saratoga. So we won't get ahead of ourselves, but that's sort of kind of the program we're thinking about.
I mentioned Maraud's win in the American Turf, and you got to be thrilled with him. Let's quickly review the runners out of the Derby before we talk a couple of other spots.
Yeah, I mean, everyone seems to have come back fine, and you know, we're kind of anxiously waiting to see what happens at Pimlico on Saturday. We're going to bypass with those four, but we want to see how that race unfolds and who wins that, and I think that'll have quite a bit of an impact on the Belmont field. But you know, right now the plan is that Vino Rosso, Audible, Noble Indy, we're all keeping an eye on the Belmont. Magnum Moon, I think we're going to freshen him up a little bit. He's here at Belmont, been training daily, but you know, he was on the fast track there for a little while, breaking his maiden January 13th and being a May 9th foal. We figured now was our opportunity to kind of let him have a little bit of a breather and hopefully gear up for a strong summer fall campaign. So, but thankfully all of them came out of the Derby in good shape.
We'll come back to a couple of other Derby weekend runners. We're going to be short on time, so I do want to ask you, because everybody's asking on the internet, Army Mule. You're a month out from the Met Mile, and curious how he's doing and if you think you're on track with him. He hasn't worked back.
No, I don't know for sure that we are on track. It's going to be close. We've had some rain in Florida, and I got to, you know, we're really focused on having him ready for the Breeders' Cup, and I got actually going to have a call with Mr. Viola later on today, and we're going to firm up some final plans. But if we're going to make the Med Mile, we need to kind of intensify the training a little bit, and I think that's something that I'll probably have a better idea on after Mr. Viola and I talk later today.
Fair enough. And we'll keep an eye on the work tab. And sounds like Dave Grenig will be the first to know or the next to know, which is fine. Let's talk about one slight surprising performance when Marauds win, and then address Always Dreaming, and you ran into a bit of a buzzsaw. Where are you with him, and what happens next?
Well, Always Dreaming's he went to Windstar Sunday morning, and that was the plan: win, lose, or draw. He was going to go back and take a couple of weeks of downtime there, and you know, get some turnout and just sort of reboot. So you know, it was a disappointing performance. It was felt like when we took him into Churchill and he breezed really well, that we were hopefully back getting back to the Always Dreaming we'd seen win the Florida Derby and the Kentucky Derby. But you know, Johnny said he felt like he was spinning his wheels a bit, and you know, when he tried to find more, he just came up a bit empty. He came out of it physically in excellent shape, and so you know, I think now it's sort of that middle of the year time where it's decision time for, that's ultimately going to come down to, you know, to the whole team. And, you know, so I think everybody basically just kind of taking a deep breath and getting through the Triple Crown series. And I think, you know, the horse is getting a little bit of a break there. And I would imagine that sometime once everything kind of quiets down, they'll huddle up and make a decision if we want to try again or not. And, you know, there's a lot of thought to go into all that, but the horse is in excellent shape.
How about Marauds win and plotting a course, I imagine, toward the Belmont Derby?
Yeah, that's what we'd certainly like to do. I mean, we were actually very concerned with the weather conditions because, you know, it was one kind of off race at Gulfstream was when we had some light rain and turf course was not firm. And Johnny felt the same thing at Keeneland, that with a little bit of moisture in the turf course, that he did not handle that as well as he did, you know, the firm turf courses he'd been on before. But, you know, it was one of those things that it just kept raining and raining and raining, and it went way beyond, you know, your traditional softest turf, and it became a bit of a bog. I thought Johnny gave him a clever ride and kept him well off the rail, which seemed to be the place to be, you know, as the rain kept coming. So we were, I wouldn't say pleasantly surprised, because he's a horse that's obviously shown great at stakes ability. I was just, my biggest concern was the condition of the turf course, but as it turned out, he handled it extremely well. And so we'll decide if we're going to go in the Pennine Ridge or maybe the Penn Mile, and hopefully as a stepping stone to the Belmont Derby. But yeah, he's been a really solid horse for us, and seems to be handling multiple distances, and now it's good to know that he can handle an off-turf course as well.
Here's the lightning round with about 40 seconds left. Todd Pletcher with us. Ivy Bell, she's okay, and going to obviously, it takes a lot of long look when you see her in the PPs now.
I think she's solid. You know, trains very impressively, and we really flirted with the idea of running in the La Troyon and stretching her out, which we want to do. And I think we're gonna target the Ogden Phipps and give her that opportunity. Nice. to stretch out a little bit. And you know, we're looking forward to that, because she certainly in her training indicated to us that she's capable of running further.
Who's the first big 2-year-old that we're going to be talking about from your barn?
I don't know. We just now kind of getting to that point where we're starting to get them going. So
wrong answer. Who's the best out of the 2-year-old sale so far?
We don't even have quite a few of the ones that came from the two-year-old bells. Most of them go right to the farm for a little break. But I think we get a promising group, I believe.
All right. Well, I'm going to check with Kruppi. Hedge fund and one-liner Friday. Which one's going to appreciate the slop more?
Oh, man, I'm worried about that already. But one-liner, pedigree-wise, you would think he would handle it. And he's got kind of a what I would describe as a small mud foot on him. So I think that could be reason for optimism. And hedge fund, he ran on a good track last year at Pimlico and didn't fire his race. But being a son of Super Saver, we know he liked the slop. So certainly looks like that's what they're going to have to be prepared for.
Amazing Audrey.
Well, I think it's going to be nice to get her back stretched out a little bit. I think she'll appreciate the mile and a quarter, and she ran very well going a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream. So it should be helpful to get her stretched back out.
Plus Kitchen Soup and Outshine as well. Of course, we're going to look at some rough weather in New York, it looks like, the rest of the week, too. Todd Pletcher, always a pleasure. Are we going to see you Friday?
Yeah, I'm still working it out. I got to enter a bunch tomorrow and see how everything shakes out and see what the weather does and see if we're going to breeze some horses in New York or what we're going to do. But hopefully see you at Pimlico.
T. Pletcher, everybody. Todd Pletcher. Going to pull up, send you out into the race day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow from Pimlico.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 144th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Will Justify dominate again as a short-priced favorite, or will a long shot up in the apple cart? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide. And while you're there, open a new ExpressBet account and check out our sensational new account offers, including a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.